Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, and featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts, and my concert buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix are coming off an incredible weekend of lacrosse action, and we'll keep the momentum going and get you ready for another scorching slate of games this week. Plus, have you ever wondered how these neutral site college events get put together? Well, we'll sit down with an old friend who's been behind some of the college lacrosse's most well-attended and biggest events over the last 20 years. Lots to get to. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dix, on Sunday night, I realized one thing that I didn't know about you, that you are such a big Toto fan.
I like Toto a lot. That's why when we were eating dinner and you kept ordering drinks and food, I'm like, we got to get down to Baltimore. Toto's coming on soon.
Yeah, that was a fun night. That was a fun night. So we went out to dinner with our wives and then rode into the concert together. It was a good time. One thing is was funny. We walk in and we were a couple minutes late. I think it was like 7:30 when it started. And there was no one in the building. There was no one walking around the concourse. It seemed pretty dead. And I was thinking, man, this is sad. Journey can't even sell out like Baltimore Arena. And then we went to find our seats and it was jam-packed.
Packed.
Everyone was in their seats.
In their seats.
Digging some Toto in the opening
where I
act.
Wanted to be.
Yeah, so I was like, wow, okay. This is a bit of a revelation, but also I want to apologize for maybe holding you up a little bit. I would have moved with a bigger pep in my step knowing that Toto was such a fan attraction.
Oh, good. I got to hear Africa Live. So that was their last song that they played. That was really, really good. So
really good.
No harm, no foul. And yeah. Journey was good.
Journey was great. It was
really I like
fun.
The way they did it. They the only complaint that I would have is there was maybe too many lulls. And when I say lulls, it was the guitar solo by Neil Schon and the piano solo by Jonathan Cain. But what I liked about that was there was no intermission and there was no encore. They just played straight through for what, a little over 2 hours.
Yeah, and it was all their hits. I mean, they
and
just
it was
got
all
to
the hits. And there was no like, you know, shuck and jive or yeah, we gotta get them back out on stage. It was straight through. So it was good.
So they've been playing that same show for, you know, this what that's their show that they play, 24 songs. And I look at this website called setlist.fm that any band, any live band, their set lists are in there forever. And you can look in advance. And I noticed that like the songs 8, 9, and 10 were like, hey, if we need to go to the bathroom,
yeah,
get another
drink. These are the ones.
These are the ones. And they did not disappoint. They played the songs exactly in that order. And everyone was there. We were able to, you know, do what we needed to do midway through the concert. So it was a lot of fun. But Dix, we got a lot to cover this week. Last week's games were amazing. We'll start with Hopkins broke away from Loyola. I know you were at the game at Homewood Field to watch your son play in the Jays. That was 13-7 win for Hopkins. Army really pounded Rutgers on the road. Like it was a good road win, 16-7 for Army. And then Georgetown got their first win over, you know, an Ivy League contender, Penn. That was a 12-9 win at Penn. It's a good win for the Hoyas. But really the big game was Syracuse, Maryland. Now I'm going to step back, give you time to think about and talk about those first three games, and then we'll get into that Syracuse, Maryland game.
Yeah, sure. So Loyola Hopkins was a sloppy game. Great crowd, especially the Loyola Greyhounds. I was on the visitor side, and I enjoyed the game with my good buddy Eric Chick and his wife Melissa. Eric and I are class of 94 grads. We played together at Hopkins, and his son Eric Vincent is a freshman for Hopkins. And but our tie remains very strong. We sat on the visitor side, and we had a great time. But the Loyola crowd was, you know, it kind of reminded me of like when I was a kid. My dad used to take me and my brother to games, and the fence would be lined. And that's what you had on the visitor side. You had the fence was lined. But, you know, and here's a, I want to give a shout out. Chris McNulty is, takes photographs for the Loyola Greyhound men's lacrosse team. He's also takes pictures for Inside Lacrosse overall. His son, Ryan, was a terrific, defender, longstanding midi for Loyola, totally. Now the director of operations, Philadelphia guy.
No, I remember McNulty. He was a great player.
Yeah, so great pictures. And it was My son Matt got some time in the game, and to have pictures of him playing on Homewood Field against Hopkins,
That's
it's pretty
cool.
cool for me and his mom. Both Hopkins graduates, and we both played at Hopkins. But this was a game won in the middle of the field. Hopkins got more ground balls, and Loyola's inability to go from defense to offense, seven failed clears in this game, was really the undoing of the Greyhounds. But give Hopkins credit. I've been saying all along that Garrett Degnan is an elite shooter, and he had three or four step downs in that game that were just terrific. Great shots. Jacob Angeles continues to impress me. Remy Reynolds, a defender for Loyola, transfer from Rutgers, did a nice job on Angeles. Did a really good job. And you look up, and Angeles still had 5 or 6 points in the game, even though he was covered very, very well by Reynolds. So, good win for the Blue Jays. Army pasting Rutgers. That really got the attention of the lacrosse world. Rutgers was a team that started out the year hot. They moved up 4 or 5 spots in not this past, this week's, but last week's Inside Lacrosse Media poll, and Army just slapped them. And you look at Army's production, very balanced. You've got Jacob Morin, Evan Plunkett, Reese Burick, and Jackson Eicher, all with 7 points. And then followed by Gunnar Fellows, Bailey O'Connor, Will Colletti, the faceoff man, 3 points. So offensively, this is a very balanced team, not a team that if there are one or two big guns struggle, that you can shut them down. Georgetown Penn, huge win for the Hoyas to go to 1-2. We mentioned last week they had the advantage of playing live action, that there's no substitute for live action. And credit Penn for opening the season with Georgetown, where some other Ivies have a easier schedule, and that there's nothing wrong with that. But Penn jumps right into it, and the Quakers got a good win. We're recording this on Wednesday, so Tuesday they beat Albany, a very stubborn Great Danes team. And then I know we're going to dive into the Maryland Syracuse game. That was just a fantastic late, late February, what, mid-February treat on a Saturday night.
Great game. Maryland wins that game in overtime. There's some a controversial call where it looked like Syracuse may have won the game, but it was a goal mouth overturn of it. Great play offensively, defensively, good matchups. I want to get your thoughts on your takeaway and maybe you kind of talk about that call at the end of the game in particular.
Physical game, the athleticism for both teams, and the tempo was fantastic. So I watched the game after it got done. What I mean by that is, after the Loyola Hopkins game, my son Matt and I went to dinner, and I was driving home, and you, amongst other people, were texting saying, "Oh my God, this play!" And I was like, I had to unplug my phone and put it to the side. Then I got home, and the game still wasn't over, so I kept going into the ESPN app, waiting for it to go into the on-demand queue from the live queue, and it was taking forever. I was like, "What the hell's going on here?"
It was funny. I did something to you. I do to everybody when they give me that. Like, don't. So you were like, and don't tell me what happens. I'm watching it on like tape delay. And I was like, oh my God, you're gonna love this game. You won't believe what happens. Which I say every time, but really, like it was hard to believe what happened, right?
Yeah, exactly. How about Braden Irksa at
Wow.
night?
He looked,
Terrific player.
he could run by anybody. He just ran by anybody.
And a guy, I don't think that he was a very starred recruit coming out of Atlanta, if I remember correctly. Ajax Apatello, our guest last week, was really, really good. Michael Leo for Syracuse, what a matchup nightmare for Maryland. And I talked last week about Loyola's either reluctance to or inability to challenge the sureties of Maryland. Syracuse did that, and they had a lot of success. So that game goes into overtime, and then you had Michael Leo with the dive. Basically, he dove into the crease. He was not pushed. And the one thing that you have to know is if you go into the goal mouth because of illegal defensive contact, meaning you were pushed, you were illegal body checked, whatever, tripped, the goal can stand if you land in the goal mouth if you were fouled. going in. You can also wipe it out if you decide, if the referees decide it was a bad pass taken by the offensive player, even though they were illegally put into the goal mouth. He was not illegally put into the goal mouth. You know, he dove and he cleanly beat the Maryland defense to the point where he wasn't pushed, he wasn't body checked, anything. And it was the appropriate call. And the officials also reviewed the call to make sure that it was right. So as much as you hate the rule, it was the right call. I was in touch with Chris Cotter, who was the play-by-play of that game. And we were texting after the game and as well as the next morning. And he's like, oh my God, he's like, these Syracuse fans. He's like, poor Kark, who's a Syracuse grad, is like explaining it to them, you know, as we're leaving the booth and we're leaving the, you know, leaving the building. And they just were like, they weren't having, they didn't care what explanation they got, who was giving the explanation. Oh my God. It was, he was like, Chris is a big guy. He was, I think he was almost afraid they weren't going to get out of the Carrier Dome or the, whatever the whatever they call the dome these days. He was afraid he wasn't going to get out of there alive.
And he didn't make the call.
No.
He had nothing to do with it. That's funny.
Didn't matter. Well, what a great game between two really, really good teams. How about Gary Gate channeling his Roy Simmons look? The slick back gray hair, a little long in the back. I mean, he's...
I was texting
several people. I'm like, I think Gary Gate's morphing into Roy Simmons.
I have one issue though. He goes with the suit, right? He doesn't do like the the sideline gear type of stuff. He goes with the suit, but he had white shoes on. No. I'm not opposed to the sneakers with suits, but if you're gonna go with it as a contrarian look, you gotta go all out. You gotta go loafers or hard dress shoes. You can't go white shoes there. That was my one beef with his look.
I got no problem with that. If anything, Gary Gate has always been unique in the sport of lacrosse, from when, you know, how great of a player he was now to a coach. And I'm not going to be the fashion police on him for that one.
But how about we've interviewed one player so far, and he was the player of the week in the fan vote on Inside Lacrosse. So just players out there, we're good luck to you. So if we give you a call, please come on the show and get ready for it. What I love about this game, Dix, and I said this, the best part of this game was that it wasn't at 1 o'clock when everyone else's favorite team was playing. And
that is a bugaboo for you.
Lacrosse fans had an opportunity to collectively, we could all focus on one great game, and it delivered too. It delivered. So the crowd was great. The atmosphere was great. The play was great. And we all got to see it and watch it together. So now we're talking about it. It's water cooler stuff, right? It's water cooler stuff. It's can you believe what happened? You know, whether it's on social media, whether it's in person. And it also made us all like, wow, lacrosse is here. It's back. It was so exciting, and it got us fired up. Why can't we do that every Saturday in February? Have one game that's in prime time. I realize having an indoor facility is a big part of that. But man, that was special. And it was it was fun to be a part of that experience, just as like a lacrosse fan.
Couldn't agree more.
All right. What a weekend. It continued, as I said, the momentum right into this week. There were some pretty big games yesterday on Tuesday. We're recording this on Wednesday. Albany beat Penn. You talked about that. BU beat Brown 16-10. Good win for BU. But Brown is struggling a little bit. They lost over the weekend at Quinnipiac, and that's 0-2 for Brown. That's the start of the season. And then wonderful game on Tuesday night. Harvard got a 14-13 win over Bryant. And Bryant looks good, and Harvard looks pretty good. Again, some really good early season play and fun games to watch.
The BU-Brown game, I caught the end of that. That was a competitive game late. That was a one-goal game where they were tied. And BU just closed Bruno out with a late run. The Harvard-Bryant game, I watched almost the entire game. And what I mean by that is it's a weeknight game. My wife and I like to watch TV together, you know, and we're watching Yellowstone right now.
Okay.
And Erica came in after like mid-first quarter or after the first quarter. She's like, hey, you want to? I was like, this game's actually pretty good. Give me a minute with it. And that was the last I saw her. on Tuesday night. Bryant, the players offensively all look the same. They're all like a slight build, thin, really, really fast, really athletic. Let me help announcers out there. Number nine is Kevin Greninger. It's not Groninger, Greninger. I know this, one, because I do my homework, but two, his father is a Loyola High School graduate who played at the University of Virginia, All-American goaltender Tom Greninger.
Oh, Tommy G.
Tommy G. So Greninger, okay? The other player that really stuck out, number 22, Johnny Hackett. This midfielder, lefty, just blazing speed. And he went through Harvard's defense a couple times. And I'm like, Jerry Byrne ain't going to be happy about that. I mean, those boys got run by like traffic cones. But give Harvard credit. They really locked down the last couple minutes of that game. They were trailing by a goal. I think they scored three or four to win the game. And Sam King continues just to be a man among boys. And he is such a good player, so smart, really the total package with his vision, his shooting ability. That was a really fun Tuesday night game that took place in Cambridge.
Yeah. On Wednesday night, tonight, we won't be able to get to these, but you'll know what happens. But there's a couple of really good games. Utah at Syracuse and also number 20 Colgate at number 10 Yale. Top 20 matchup on a Wednesday night. Let's go.
No doubt.
So talking about some big matchup sticks, let's bring in our guest this week, Andy Bilello. He's Vice President of Events at Corrigan Sports Enterprises, and he's putting together some college lacrosse events throughout the season where it pairs up some big top 20 matchups, and we'll bring in Andy and talk to him. Our guest today is Andy Bilello, the Vice President of Events for Corrigan Sports Enterprises. Dixie and I go way back with Andy, back to our days as undergrads working for AB in the athletics department at JHU. Andy worked in college athletics for 15 years before moving on to Inside Lacrosse as the director of business development and events. During that decade window from 2003 to 2013, when college lacrosse events grew into NFL stadiums, he was instrumental in growing the sport as the key figure behind some of college lacrosse's most well-attended and biggest events. For the past decade, Andy has been at Corrigan Sports working on lacrosse events for top players at all levels, including the upcoming College Lacrosse Live series this spring. AB, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
I feel like it's 1994, sharing time with the two of you.
Dixie would have a top 10 each Friday that he would post in the locker room about the
Yeah.
upcoming opponent. I remember some of those were amazing. Yeah, they
They
were
were
good.
good.
So AB, I was looking up preparing for our interview. When the lacrosse moved to started growing from college campuses, the Final Four championship weekend from college campuses to NFL stadiums, and you and I were like we were working at Towson University together, and we were in charge of marketing the championships when it was in Baltimore those years. And then you and I, you hired me to work with you at Penn for the first championships that were in Philadelphia. And then you went to Inside Lacrosse. So you've been behind, as I said in your intro, some of those biggest and most well-attended events. In fact, for the top 20 lacrosse individual season records, 2009 Syracuse has the total attendance record in 2009. But the top 20 all fell into that era of like 2003 to 2013. For regular season lacrosse events that are not part of a spring football game, you had your hand in the top eight all-time events that have been attended by college lacrosse fans, the top eight all-time well-attended college lacrosse events or games. Can you walk us through like a little bit of like how that came about or how that move, or your career and how that move started? So start with a little history before we get into what you're working on now.
Well, I think the simplest way of looking at it was when I was getting into the point of my career where I really felt like I understood the lacrosse audience and the big brand names in the sport. We just needed to treat lacrosse like you would treat football or basketball. And a lot of it comes down to just time and attention. And in a lot of college athletic programs, that's difficult. You know, as much as we love lacrosse, even at the some of the biggest, you know, name brand schools in the sport, those coaches and those teams are fighting for, you know, attention within their own athletic department. And I learned when we were part of the group of schools in Baltimore that hosted the championship in 2003, when people would at least chip in and put some dedicated time and effort into communicating to people about the event, you could see a dramatic difference in participation. And then at Inside Lacrosse, quite honestly, I got to give a lot of credit to Bob Carpenter, who, you know, owned and managed the company when I first joined it. And he just had vision that was in line with my vision. Like, Bob didn't know like some of the logistics and practical things you needed to do to market and operate those events, but he saw what it could be. And he was able to give me and then you and other people on the staff the support to go for it. And I think what we did then, and now I think what Corrigan Sports is doing to, you know, and it's in a slightly different application, is just we're providing that support where an athletic program finds it difficult to do. As an outside group that really understands lacrosse, knows the people, and knows how to communicate, we're just going to put the time and the effort in. And so I don't think it's as much a complex concept as it is applying things that people are used to in other sports, but don't do for lacrosse often enough.
Corrigan Sports is putting together a three-game series of events called the College Lacrosse Live Series. The first one is on March 16th with Syracuse and Delaware. Why create this event series, and how did you come up with the concept for it?
Really, it came out of conversations that we had after COVID that, you know, at Corrigan, we've done a lot, both in my decade here and previously, with high school athletes in the summertime. And, you know, our prior signature event is the All-America, you know, senior game that's on television every year. And we have an underclass tournament with a lot of top talent, kids who want exposure to college programs. We said we need to diversify. We need to do something else. From a business standpoint, why not use some of our relationships and our expertise, if you will, in lacrosse to do something different in college? I don't know that we as much had a specific plan as to the types of games we wanted as we just started conversations. We started speaking to college coaches, many of whom we're friends with. We see them at our All-America events in the summer. So we could start seeing, like, what are they thinking for the next year? What are they trying to do that's different? And could we be a solution? Could we be someone who's providing that support that maybe they find more difficult to get, sometimes even on their own campus? And the three event dates that we have for 2024 just kind of grew out of that. We learned a little bit internally last year. We hosted a game between Hobart and Providence at U.S. Lacrosse facility in Sparks, Maryland. And then we also were able to help manage North Carolina playing Syracuse at Good Counsel High School. And those gave us both the chance to, as an entire staff, to understand what we need to do to produce one of these events. And it gave us also some credibility with people we were already talking to about doing something similar the next year.
I think one of a question that a lot of listeners would have is, how far out do you plan this? How do you select the teams? And then how do you select the venues or locations that the events will be in?
All right. Well, as far as how far out, I would say for this particular season, 2024, I know that we started some conversations with coaches basically in April of 2023. I know I was down in Charlotte, North Carolina, along with Ryan Corrigan. We were, you know, kind of consultants for the ACC Women's Lacrosse Championship. And on one of the off days with the tournament, we went up to Durham and Chapel Hill just to visit Duke and Carolina and just look around. And we had lunch with John Donowski and his coaching staff. And we started talking about what things do you guys do? What are you interested in? And they had noticed the game that we had between Carolina and Syracuse, two other ACC programs. And start talking about the atmosphere. I know Duke has been has participated in some events on Long Island at high schools, and I know John Donowski in particular was very enthusiastic about an intimate venue, something where you felt like if you had 5,000 people, it was a big deal, and you could feel it on the field that the players could feed off that energy. And then I ended up also running it, talking to Matt Brown from the University of Denver when we hosted one of our All-America tryouts on his campus in early June. And he was still trying to see if he and John Donowski could, make sure that they had a date to play each other in 2024 and going forward. And Matt and I talked a little bit. Then he contacted me a few weeks later and said, you know what? You guys maybe could help us. Rather than travel to North Carolina or for Duke to come out to Denver, can we do this in some other location that it's good for exposure? And, college coaches, besides winning the games, they're always thinking about recruiting. Can they be in an area that a lot of high school athletes that they might want to, talk to eventually, get a chance to see their teams up close and be excited about them? So that developed where Matt and I actually talked. I think it was late June when he was in the airport flying to San Diego for the World Championships, because Matt was head coach for Team Canada. John was the head coach for the USA. And they actually could talk about this off the side while they were both in San Diego for 2 weeks. So that particular game, the conversation started a little less than a year ago. Some of the other coaches, we were talking more in the summer, and it came together in the fall. So, really, you start with what is your matchup? What is there a good game? So it's not as much a selection as it is a progression in these conversations to see if we can help them. And particularly a neutral site game, both teams have to buy into it to some degree. And, just so happened that in each of these situations, there was something unique about it that we're helping. So with Duke Denver, it was a long-running rivalry type game, but they wanted to go somewhere else instead of on campus. For Delaware Syracuse, I know Syracuse is actually on spring break. They were already committed to go down to Charlotte, North Carolina to play Johns Hopkins on March 9th. They are staying down in North Carolina. I think they might be even be going to the Outer Banks. They want to practice and play outside in warm weather. And when they ended up with this chance to play Delaware, they said they want to do this on the way back to Syracuse. So they actually I believe Gary Gate contacted my boss, Lee Corrigan, and said, hey, can you guys help? Can you find us someplace that we can play that game so that we're not going all the way back to Syracuse? We can kind of work it into our travel itinerary.
Again, just to clarify, like you start talking to college coaches, right? The relationships you have there. And then I know that a lot of times it's handed off at some point. Who you are you then talking to administrators who support the lacrosse programs? And then what kind of negotiations or things does Corrigan or an event provider provide for the teams and the schools that are participating?
Well, I'd say lacrosse is still at the point where the majority of your conversation is with the coaching staff. Like I say, like we didn't mention Notre Dame. I know I had had some conversations with Ryan Wellner, one of their assistant coaches, last summer, and then Kevin Corrigan, who's Lee's cousin. They had chatted, and Ryan Corrigan had been in the middle of something. Like Notre Dame was looking, could they do a game somewhere else again for exposure in the New York area? They hadn't been there in a while, and that is fertile recruiting territory for them. So in each of those cases, though, once we arrived at like there is a game and there is a date, then the conversation is usually with the coach. And sometimes they will get an assistant or an associate athletic director involved just to confirm specifics. Sometimes, you're only dealing with the coach, and maybe they pass a letter of an agreement through to someone in their administration. But typically, the coaches still control, by and large, their schedule and what they want to do. And again, lacrosse usually is not a major money maker in these athletic programs. So they just want to make sure that there are proper preparation, that this is going to be a good experience for their team. And maybe there's a little bit about money if you were moving a game that was going to be on your campus. Again, that can be very different depending on the school and the unique circumstances of why that game is a date that you're talking about.
What are some of the biggest challenges or hurdles that you need to overcome in this process?
It's usually matching a date with a good location. With the history, you started our conversation. We would look at NFL stadiums. That was even a longer lead time. Sometimes that was a 2 to 3 year process just to have a stadium set aside certain dates. And then you would work to get good games on one of those preferred weekends. In this situation, where we're only talking maybe 10 to 12 months out, and with the philosophy of let's take them to smaller venues, let's focus on the experience. Now you're looking at usually high schools. It's typically challenging for a college program to want to play at another college location, but a high school satisfies some of their need for exposure for recruiting. It also, though, gives us a more intimate venue, something where, people are on top of the action. Now, the challenge there is finding schools that fit both. They have a decent infrastructure in terms of seating areas, sometimes even press box, locker rooms, but also limited access so you can sell tickets. There are a lot of, like in Maryland, for example, in the Baltimore area, there are some really nice schools, a lot of them private schools that have excellent facilities, but they're so open that it's difficult to have a focal point where people have to enter from one or two point areas and you can sell tickets. So that somewhat can be limiting. And then, of course, I know there was one school we looked at for Delaware, or not for Delaware, for North Carolina, Syracuse in 2023. And that school had a big track meet. And they're like, sorry, we can't do it on that particular date because this other event is already committed to and it's a big deal in our county. So finding the place after you have the matchup is the next most difficult thing because it's got to be this unique combination of small, yet still having a quality facility. And that's not so easy.
I saw that Headstrong is your charitable partner on these events. How did that relationship come about, and how can lacrosse fans get involved?
Well, Headstrong has just had a unique relationship in the lacrosse community since its inception. I mean, we dealt with them when we were at Inside Lacrosse. I remember being involved in producing television content about Nick Collalure and his battle with cancer. I think he had a form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And, I've stayed in touch with, Pat Collalure and his family members. So have the Corrigans. So it was somewhat like the conversations with the college coaches. Once we knew we were going to do something, we said, well, how can we also, both for public relations, but also just for rounding out, like getting all of the lacrosse community to support this, is there a charitable component to this? We at Corrigan Sports, we do that a lot with our running events where, organizations can use that marathon or half marathon as a fundraiser. And it adds to the word of mouth communication about the event to get other people also involved. So I think just the historical relationships with the Collalure family and understanding that Headstrong has often had a unique spate place with the lacrosse community. I think, I can't remember whether Ryan Corrigan reached out to them at first or whether they spoke to him, but I know Ryan had the initial conversations and then got me involved. And because of my history working with them at the Inside Lacrosse events many years ago, it just seemed to happen very quickly and naturally.
So three events starting on March 16th. How can fans get tickets? And what kind of are there any enhancements that you're doing with, you know, premium experiences for fans or different ticket types?
Yeah, anyone can go to collegelacrosselive.com. You can just simply collegelacrosselive.com. All three dates have their own unique links in there to buy tickets. There's standard like adult and youth tickets available. Youth is for ages 12 and under. We do have VIP experiences, and that was something we did really well and learned a lot last year when we hosted the Carolina Syracuse and Hobart Providence games, where we do have a higher price ticket with food and beverages included and sideline seating. And we try and create basically a party on the sideline opposite the team benches. The other thing that we do that I think can sometimes college programs have trouble focusing on, and even when we were at Inside Lacrosse, we did a lot to say like the presentation is at this high level because we're in a professional venue and we use the video board, but we're adding like little things like fireworks. We're bringing in a video board. We're doing things with music. Again, not necessarily unusual for sports in general, but I don't think typically applied to lacrosse. And just try and make it a real party with some energy during the 2 hours that people are also watching, you know, some of the best lacrosse teams in the country.
So again, if you are interested, check that out, collegelacrosselive.com. You can find tickets. You can pick your event weekend that you're free. You can pick the matchup that you want to go see, but make your plans, collegelacrosselive.com.
So AB, one of the things I want to talk to you about, many of our listeners probably don't know that you're a Michigan man and you played lacrosse for the Michigan Wolverines. What was your experience like in Ann Arbor? And when you look at the current edition and the accomplishments of that lacrosse program, how would you best describe that?
Well, I can't talk about my Michigan lacrosse experience and what I see from the Wolverines currently without referencing my background at Johns Hopkins. So I went to Hopkins undergrad, played soccer, actually. And my two soccer coaches in college were Bill Tierney and Don Zimmerman, which says a lot about the
very
history.
Familiar with the pitch, those two.
Very tells you a lot about the history of the athletic program at Hopkins. But so if you were the primary, if you were the number one assistant in lacrosse back in the 1980s, your fall responsibility was to be the soccer coach. So being at Johns Hopkins and being an athlete, which overall, was a really great experience for me, even though I wasn't, a highly successful athlete myself, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot about all the cliches in sports about teamwork and setting goals. And I also picked up more lacrosse because at Hopkins, playing lacrosse with your fraternity in the intramural season was also something that I enjoyed. And at Hopkins, it was unique. I'm sure there's not a lot of intramural lacrosse programs in most schools across the country. So when I went to business school at the University of Michigan, they had a club program in lacrosse. And I just decided that I needed some outlet from school, from the academic part of it. And I ended up playing and meeting some really cool people, including John Paul, the first varsity coach. The Michigan program was one of my teammates. You have, my friend Ted Moon, who's now coaching in college at Georgetown. And, then it was club. We would practice 3 days a week. There were a lot of people who weren't in very good shape, especially when you'd start practices again in the second semester. You would need 2 to 3 weeks of people actually running before you could start to resemble a team. It was also a unique time because there weren't as many programs in the Midwest. We would play varsity teams. I believe Ohio State and Notre Dame, and I know Michigan State for sure, were all varsity level programs then that would at least play us. I don't think that the games counted on their schedules, but they would at least use us as opportunities to one, Michigan isn't just another Division I school in my mind. It is one of, the probably half dozen to a dozen most recognized college athletics programs. And now it put the sport on a stage that it hadn't been previously. And I know that they had just been waiting for that breakthrough, which finally happened last year. I think they've been able, both in John Paul's time there and then in Kevin Connery's time there, get good players, but I don't know that they had gotten depth. And I think they showed that last year. Finally, they had a fully balanced roster that could compete at the top level. And I know I enjoyed watching them win the Big Ten tournament and make the quarterfinals. I don't know. I don't know that I can feel pride because it was a, my experience was I was a grad student. And I don't know that you ever have the same connection the way you do when you play as an undergraduate somewhere. I wonder how some of the athletes, recent years who are, the COVID, extension to their college careers that they've now competed for two different schools, sometimes even maybe three in some sports. Do they feel the same way about that second school that they did for where they started their college career? I don't know. I enjoy being a Michigan fan and I love what they've accomplished as a program. I don't feel like I can take credit for the emotional development of what they've achieved, but I think it's unique because it's a big brand. It's not just another school that didn't have football who decided, like, let's add lacrosse so we can get students. This is a school that wants to win, and they're at the level that now they can, that's a reasonable expectation.
AB, we talked about the College Lacrosse Live series. Another project you've been working on for a decade at Corrigan has been the All-America game. You have some new changes to that game and the format in 2024. Can you enlighten us on what those are?
Thanks. It really, the big change for All America is at the underclass level. It's for the athletes still in high school and in the highlight division, which are really for rising seniors. For the first time ever, we are making it invitation only. We felt like we've noticed in recent years, as athletes are committed to colleges, they're naturally not as incentivized to go participate in as many events in the summer. They don't need the exposure the way they did when they were still sophomores and in rising juniors. But we felt like the best interest of the All-America event is just to have great competition. And so by inviting top players, players who know where they're going to college, we could have an unprecedented tournament. We could have something that would be amazing to watch. And the senior game, I think, is still something that most high school lacrosse players would love to be part of. Some of them set their goal is to be one of those top 44 boys or top 44 girls in the country. And if you come and you play in this highlight tournament, you get to play in front of the people at Inside Lacrosse who will select that senior game group. And I think it's a chance to prove that you're one of them, that you should get that invite the next year. And even if you know you're going to an ACC school or a Big Ten school or Ivy League school, Patriot League school, whatever it might be, no, you don't have to run around and travel as frequently. You don't have to play in as many events, but you still have to play and you still have to get better. You have to prepare to compete in college. And I don't know that there would be a better way than competing against the other best players in the high school level across the country. And so that's something that's new. We're working through this invitation process in different regions around the country right now. And the early returns have been remarkable. We've been able to announce on the boys' side, the Midwest and the upstate New York teams. We've announced on the girls' side, the Philadelphia team. We'll be announcing more teams coming up soon. And if people look at those rosters, those players, the reputations they have, and the colleges that they're going to be playing in a few years, I think people are going to be really impressed, and it's going to be an amazing tournament.
How many teams do you expect in each, like boys and girls teams, do you expect in each of the highlight division?
Well, there's 12 regions around the country, and so each region will have their team. And so we have it at that highlight division, which is for rising seniors, Burn Division, which is for rising juniors, and the Command Division, which is for rising freshmen and sophomores. So we do that consistently. So that's 72 teams, boys and girls, from all around the country.
And I must have missed something, but all of those will be invitation only?
No, just the highlight. The younger divisions remain the same format that we've had for almost 2 decades of tryouts. And it's still an opportunity for those players to compete on the field to show that they should represent their region. We just felt that for the rising seniors, their patterns of behavior have changed in recent years, and it's understandable. So let's adjust to it. Let's revise our format and encourage the best players to compete.
AB, before you go, I have one more question for you. My pet peeve was definitely the last few years as a lacrosse fan has been the lack of diversity in game times, and that every game seems to be at noon or 1 o'clock on Saturdays, especially early in the season when we have these amazing, like top 20 non-conference matchups. I'm going to give you 2 minutes to make your pitch to be the czar college lacrosse or the commissioner of college lacrosse, and what is your plan to organize and coordinate game times so that we can have more viewing experiences like the Syracuse Maryland game?
Well, I think it starts in a particular market, like Baltimore example, because it's unique in that there are so many Division I programs within, a 40-minute drive of each other. I've never understood that, why Hopkins, Loyola, Towson, potentially Navy, Maryland, UMBC can't, like, the ADs or an associate ADs can't get on a Zoom call and say, you know what? Why don't you play? We'll play at 2, we'll play at 4, we'll play at 6. But it goes deeper than that. Like, it drives me crazy since the development of the conference competition about a decade or so ago has taken over importance, that coaches put a lot of these great matchups in February or early March. Like, early March was the traditional start of lacrosse for many, many years. And that was always in the Mid-Atlantic region going to be a coin flip. Do you get like that 54 degree day that's sunny and a lot of people want to come out? Or do you get like 40 degrees and it's misty, wet, almost snow, and no one wants to sit outside for 2 hours? So now they've extended that season by almost a month. And you're asking lacrosse fans to sit outside for 2 hours for two-thirds of the season when no one wants to be outside for 2 hours. And you could at least move some of these matchups into warmer weather. Like, again, love Hopkins, respect Loyola, who I think does amongst the best jobs in the sport of engaging their campus community to be at lacrosse games. But they played last weekend when, I guess they got lucky. They've gotten lucky a few times that the weather wasn't that bad, but it had snowed and it was probably 40 degrees at best on Saturday at peak. They're a mile apart. I still feel like they could find a way to play on a Wednesday in April when it's 65 or 70 degrees and all of their student body can support the game and it would be an amazing atmosphere. And that's just one example. I think a lot of programs around the country have these same challenges, but it gets back to the conversation we had at the very beginning of our discussion. In most athletic departments, lacrosse just isn't that important. And so the same people who think about marketing and promotion, they are worried about and working every home men's and women's basketball game. And most Division I schools right now is a big time. They're launching their football ticket promotions. They're trying to get people to buy season tickets for next September and October. Like, that's where the money is, and that's where most of their time and attention and their expectations are. And lacrosse, unfortunately, falls into a bucket of programs where maybe someone talks to their coach one time and they're like, well, let's circle a date or two and we'll try and do something and we'll send out some emails. And I think the biggest thing that anyone can do in coordinating our lacrosse programs and coaches is to give them a template of how you need to talk to the people in your own campus and what are the goals that you should have Well, how are you going to ask them to help you that is aspirational yet practical at the same time? So I guess I don't know if I'm giving you a specific answer as much as I'm addressing some of the challenges, but I do think a little coordination would go a long way where there's where their schools near each other, just to give people options. I think adding in the television component and the way people now can view through streaming services, you know, gives you a reason, even if you're not doing something just for your fans who are sitting there in the stadium, you're doing it for fans and people that you're going to create as fans by giving them more chances to see your team.
AB, great perspective. You exceeded your 2-minute time limit, but you made a strong case for why you should be a candidate for my commissioner of college lacrosse. Reminder, you can get your tickets to the College Lacrosse Live series. Go to collegelacrosselive.com. AB, thank you so much for joining us on the D-Fly Dixie podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast presented by Simplicity Group. Dixie, how fun was it to catch up with AB?
It was great. I mean, from the time, I mean, literally the guy. So he introduced me to a really good friend of mine, Tristan Davies, who was a writing seminar professor at Johns Hopkins. I worked with Andy, work study at Hopkins. And before I came along, the Hopkins Lacrosse Media Guide didn't have individual bios, player bios.
Mm-hmm. Just pictures.
And I said
to
Andy, I want to do this. They just didn't have, you know, it was him
it's
and
just like
one
a photo.
Other person.
Yeah. It was like a photo. Yeah.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is they just didn't have like the resources to, you know, when you're at Hopkins, you've got 10 sports. You know, so AB's like, yeah, let's do it. Like, I'm like, I'd love to do it. Not only did I do it, but I went to Tristan and I was able to get an independent study, 3 credits out of it. I got an A. That was a project. I wrote it up, told him what I was going to do. He ran it past his leadership and I ended up getting 3 credit and I got an A, independent study for creating the biographies. So ever since 1993, was the first year, my junior year.
That they had bias. And it's the only A you ever got at Johns Hopkins, too.
That is not true. That is absolutely false. I did get other A's.
Well, I go back even further. Do you know that AB and my older brother, Jack, were roommates at Hopkins?
I think I did know that.
Yeah, they were fraternity brothers. And, you know, both my brother was football, baseball guy. But Andy was a soccer player, but they were in the same fraternity. They were roommates for a little bit. So I have actually known Andy since I was 10 years old. Then I go to Hopkins and I needed a work study job and I had some terrible job somewhere on campus, like in some office back when you could smoke on campus. It was like a smoky office in like Garland Hall or something, like in the basement of Garland Hall or something. It was awful. I had filed papers or something. And he was like, come work for me in the athletic department. So that's like where I got my start working there. And
he saved me from, I used to check IDs at the door of the, I used to have a little desk.
Yeah.
And people would have to come in and show their
officer,
IDs.
And officer would, Cruz and officer.
So Cruiser and Frazier weren't there yet. Okay. Dick Frazier.
I know who you're talking
RIP
about.
RIP to both of them. Just two great
legends.
Men. The Hop Cops back when I started were, I don't know if you remember, Rodney Thorsvik, blonde hair guy, drove a motorcycle, younger guy.
No, don't remember him.
And then Roy Hilton.
I remember Roy Hilton.
Officer Hilton, defensive end for the Baltimore Colts.
Yeah, awesome guy. I really cared about
Loved
like
Officer
what you were
Hilton.
Doing. Like he was like, hey, Dan, how you doing? What's, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah. yeah. He got, so AB got you out of that duty and...
Yeah, because I used the plum job was having the back door because no one came through the back door.
Yeah.
So basically, I just would sleep back there and get paid. The front door, though, and I had the evening shift after practice or, you know, whatever, after class. And it used to get like people coming in to play hoops or use the pool. If they didn't have that Hopkins Gym Dandy membership, they couldn't come in. And they used to get, I mean, people used to get hot when I wouldn't let them in. And You had everybody from somebody looking to dunk a basketball to somebody coming from the Hopkins Club eating their charcuterie board that just wanted to swim a couple laps. They would get equally upset with me when I wouldn't let them in. That's where you had to get the hop cops involved.
Oh man, you're bringing back so many memories. Yeah, so that was a my work study job was the first time Andy hired me. He hired me like six other times, including at Hopkins and Penn and Towson and Odinsai Lacrosse. So we've worked together for a long time. That guy's been an old friend, mentor, consultant, whatever. I feel like a real brother, almost like a brother to me. So it was great talking to him. Dixie, there are some awesome games this week. There are four, I'm going to call them top 20 games on Saturday and two on Sunday. So let's get right into the game previews this week. The first one, noon on ESPN Plus, number 9, Johns Hopkins goes down to Tobacco Road to take on number 15, North Carolina.
Game last year that was played in Baltimore in the middle of February, and Carolina won that game over Johns Hopkins. And you thought that that would springboard the Tar Heels, but that ended up being, I think that ended up being their best win in 2023 was over Johns Hopkins. This is a Carolina team that two victories to start the season. They beat Mercer, they beat Fairfield. Colin Krieg in the goal has been really, really good. Brady Wambach and Andrew Tyre. Wambach, a freshman faceoff man, and Andrew Tyre, we know very, very well. Really good 1-2 punch at the faceoff dot. And then two youngsters, Owen Duffy and Dom Petromala, really playing high-level lacrosse. But, look, all due respect to Mercer and Fairfield, they're not Johns Hopkins. And Hopkins rolls into Chapel Hill off of a, what, three-game win streak? Towson, Georgetown, now Loyola. We mentioned their offensive prowess. Defensively, their shorties, Brett Martin, very, very talented. Scott Smith is incredibly tough. This will be a really, really good game between two teams, and I think a nice measuring stick of where Carolina is right now in this early season, because Carolina's schedule really picks up, Hopkins, and then the following weekend, I know we'll talk about it next week, then they play, two games in 3 days against Princeton and Penn. So this will be a good test for the Tar Heels.
Yeah, no doubt. It's the game I'm looking forward to watching. Number 17, Rutgers, 2-1, looking to bounce back against number 22, calling out number 22, Loyola, who's 1-2 now. Both teams looking to rebound and get a key win here. That game's at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, Rutgers, Shane Knoblauch, one of the best midfielders in the country. He started out hot against Army, scored the first two Scarlet Knight goals of the game, really in the first 3, 4 minutes of the contest. And that was really the only bright spot for Rutgers as Army just really took control of that game. Eric Pacheco, faceoff man for Loyola, actually did a really nice job against Hopkins this past weekend, but the inability of Loyola to pick up ground balls off of the faceoff really did them in. So I'm looking at the faceoff battle in this game. Luke Stout for Loyola has been really, really good between the pipes. Carden Stoller for Rutgers has done a nice job, last weekend notwithstanding, where I think last weekend, Rutgers, it's one of those things where I know people will say, okay, burn the tape. No, watch it once and then burn it. But you're going to learn a lot more from that lopsided loss against a really, really talented Army team than you were, you would if you played a weaker, lesser opponent. Rutgers has beaten Loyola the last 2 years, I know. And last year, Loyola started off 2-0, wins over Maryland and Hopkins, and then they lost to Rutgers. And that's where their season kind of hit a little bit of a speed bump, and then was a little uneven for the rest of the season. So this is a really, really big one for both teams. But more, I think, for Loyola, if they can get a win over a Big Ten school, that could come in handy down the stretch. They already got a nice win over Georgetown that I think is going to be a big chip in their pocket come Selection Sunday. Rutgers would be also a nice trophy.
There's a top 10 matchup in the mountains this week when number 8 Cornell will travel out to Peter Martin Stadium, take on the number 5 Denver Pios. Both teams are undefeated, and it's a 2 o'clock start.
What I like about Denver, new head coach, but not a new coach to the program, and no hangover from that come from behind win over Hopkins 13-12. You know, they beat a scrappy Air Force team 11-9. Then they beat a really good Utah team in Utah this past weekend 16-8. So I like this Denver team. And when you look at their scoring, you know, J.J. Silstrop was the hero against Hopkins, but you've had Noah Manning and Michael Lampert, Josh Carlson. They're getting different guys to score and contribute in this offense under new offensive coordinator Dave Metzbauer. Cornell, it really starts with C.J. Kirst. And can Denver get home cooking, you know, out in the mountains? And can they take advantage of a younger, less experienced defense, you know, minus Chase Erlin, minus Max Adler for the Cornell Big Red? Really, this is a really interesting game on paper. And I think it's going to play out to be one of the better games of the weekend.
And our fourth top 20 matchup on Saturday is number 11, Princeton, comes down to Maryland to take on the number 4 ranked Terrapins, two undefeated teams. This game's at 2 o'clock. And I'm not going to be able to go, Dix. I have basketball conflict. My rescheduled girls basketball game that I begged to have it in the morning, they scheduled it right at 2 o'clock, exactly when this game is going to happen. And I couldn't be more disappointed. But enough about me. This is going to be a really good matchup. This is really going to be a really good matchup.
For sure. When you look at Princeton, two convincing wins to start 2024 against Monmouth and Manhattan. And much like Carolina, this is a step up in class, a step up in competition.
For sure.
Number one ranked freshman recruiting class, according to Inside Lacrosse. And Nate Kabiri and Colin Burns, the two attackmen from Georgetown Prep, have been really, really good. Princeton's been facing off really, really well. They're getting good goaltending from Mike, GM from Caro. Coulter Mackesy, don't forget about him, even though you got all the diaper dandies. That guy can bring it. Terrific score. Maryland, I don't think there's going to be any hangover from the Syracuse game. In fact, I think that's going to elevate the Terrapins' confidence even more. And that defense, they at times manhandle Syracuse's offense. Ajax Apatello in particular was super impressive. There were a couple times where he locked up Joey Spallina. That doesn't happen. Spallina's a big, strong kid, and Ajax just locked him up. Special defender. But don't forget about Burles and Schaller. And then you have McNaney between the pipes. Does Princeton have the midfielders to go at Maryland shorties is a big question of mine going into this game.
It's a new group. You know,
it is.
They had a whole bunch of guys, Jake Stevens and Vidaro and
lost
Sam
a lot.
English. They lost a lot in the midfield of experience. So it's a new group. That'll be the key feature. I think I love what I've seen from Princeton's attack so far. I imagine Zapatello and Mackesy will match up. Probably be the matchup, I would guess. But the two freshmen have been really good, like surprisingly, like better even than I thought they were going to be. But the midfield will be the one that decides it. And as you said, can Princeton attack the shorties for Maryland and try to gain an edge there? Because the TAC defense might be a neutral, might not be where their offense needs to come from.
There you go. Well, you just did my job for me. Well done.
All right, moving on to Sunday, February 25th, Dix. Number 18, Ohio State will travel to Virginia to take on the number 3 Cavaliers, 1 o'clock on ESPN Plus, and what I'm calling the Pelkey Bowl.
You got to call it the Pelkey Bowl.
Got to.
Because you got Dad Kevin, terrific player for Virginia back in the 90s, and then Mitchell Pelkey doing a great job on social media. The Ohio State grad. Mitchell Pelkey could have had a fifth year because of COVID and elected not to take it to pursue his career as a content creator.
Yeah. And he does a great job with it. I enjoy watching his stuff, and I particularly like the longer format stuff that he does.
Ohio State 4-0 coming into this game, and their last game was their most impressive, in my opinion, beating Air Force 12-4 on the road. This is coming off of struggling at home against Bellarmine, a nice win against Air Force. And you look at Ohio State, a team that a lot of people really aren't talking about right now. They're good, they're balanced. Gannon Matthews has come in and 12 points. Ed Sheen continues to develop. He's got 10 points. And this is a group that I think has a lot to prove. And this will be a stiff ultimate test on the road against Virginia, a Cavalier team that handled Richmond on their home turf last weekend. And Richmond's really, really good. And I handle's not the right word. Got the better of. It was a very competitive game, a very good game. But Virginia, just so many scoring weapons. Schellenberger and then Cormier just became top of Virginia all-time list. And it's just a really, really solid team. But we'll see how Virginia welcomes Ohio State to Klockner Stadium. They've already got one win over a Big Ten team. They beat Michigan, a couple weeks ago. Now they get the Buckeyes.
And finally, rounding out the weekend slate, number 19, Georgetown travels to number one ranked Notre Dame. The game's at 2 o'clock and it'll be on ESPNU.
Yeah, televised game. So, Notre Dame dismantled Cleveland State, and then they played relatively close to Marquette for about a quarter and a half before they just hit the gas. They look really good right now. Eric Dobson in the midfield and Jordan Faison, who I'm familiar with, just with my younger son Owen playing at different tournaments and showcases with Faison. You always knew he had the athleticism, and speed and toughness, but just didn't have a great stick. Well, now it looks like the stick has gotten pretty darn close to all the other attributes that he has. And then you still have the Cavanaugh brothers in there. And this is a Georgetown team that win over Penn, that's a really big win for them, not just to get that win over a quality opponent, but to boost the confidence, to boost the morale of that team. They did not want to go and start a second season in a row 0-3. And so you got to give the Hoyas a lot of credit for going into Philadelphia and winning that game. That a lot of credit to the Hoyas. But this is a tough trip to South Bend to take on the defending national champions. But I think if anybody is, hashtag gotta, GATA. If you know. If you don't, you got to ask. But one of the greatest mantras in college lacrosse.
Great slate of games this week, and I love that it ends with a TV game on Sunday that hopefully the lacrosse fans can unite and watch that game together. It takes us to our give and go topic of the week, Dix. We're talking about collective viewing experiences, water cooler moments. Our topic this week, TV sitcoms. Best sitcoms of all time. But here's the task, all right? We're going to do a draft. I get to pick first. Because you picked first last week, but imagine you're homesick for like a weekend, or you're snowed in, and you got to binge watch like a TV sitcom, something, old one. Now the answers that we'll give here probably will date us a little bit. Like if it was newer, like a younger crowd, they might say Schitt's Creek or Parks and Rec or one of these, or if like. We would have asked our parents this, they would probably say something like the Honeymooners or I don't know, MASH or something like that. But it might date us a little bit, but I will take that chance. All right. You're binge watching something for an entire weekend. My first choice is going to be Seinfeld. I'm going to start with Seinfeld. That's my number one draft pick of best TV sitcom of all time.
Really thinking outside of the box there, aren't you?
It's just what I'm going to watch.
Yeah,
I
I
watch it
got you.
anyway. Half of my life is Seinfeld quotes.
I think the thing with sitcoms is, though, you don't have to necessarily be a super fan of the sitcom, like The Office, for instance, which I'm not picking The Office.
You do this every week. You
Okay,
name
but I'm
something.
but I, okay,
Okay.
because I like to give context. All
Okay.
right. The Office, I like The Office. But like if I'm traveling or something and I want something on in the background, typically on Comedy Central, there's like Office marathons and you'll just leave them on.
Yeah.
Even in the later years of the show, where it got really wonky, where like, Robert California is out there and, other characters, So anyway, this is really going to date me, but this show just makes me feel good. Happy Days.
Okay.
I love Happy Days. Does that count as a sitcom?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love Happy Days. I mean, Henry Winkler is one of the coolest dudes in Hollywood. Ron Howard, one of the most talented people. And you got the sidekicks and Chachi and
Potsy.
the parents, Arnold. It's just a show that you watch it and it just makes you feel good. Happy Days. Used to watch it as a kid.
No, great show. Great show. You were a Laverne and Shirley fan too?
Not really, no.
Okay. Yeah.
I did
All
like
right.
Lenny and Squiggy.
All right. So you got a Happy Days. I'm going to go with The Office as my second choice. I'm going to take The Office as my second choice. Just again, love that show. So many great lines, great characters, villains, protagonists, just a well-written and then the talent that was like Steve Carell is just so good. And then whoever thought John Krasinski would go on to be an action star and be Jack Ryan? I never would have predicted that. I'm going Seinfeld in The Office. What's your second pick?
Eastbound and Down. If you have a weekend or if you're laid up and you want to watch back to back to back and just laugh your head off, Eastbound and Down with Danny McBride. You ever see it?
I have seen
Love it.
it.
I
And
mean, you got
not.
Will Ferrell guest appearance in there, Craig Robinson guest appearance.
Okay. Yeah.
The scene
Yeah.
where Kenny has to go to Mexico, the season where he goes to Mexico to resurrect his career and he comes out to Real American, the Hulk Hogan entrance theme. That's must see TV.
Right. My third choice is going to be The Simpsons. One of the longest running, greatest programs of all time. If I'm stuck at home, I'm going to watch The Simpsons. So my 8-year-old son Bennett started watching The Simpsons. So I came home. I think it's on like Disney or like one of the streaming services we get. And he's watching The Simpsons. And I'm like, you know what? This is way better than some of the other stuff that he watches that I'll enjoy. Because I mean, there was so much like really bad animated stuff for so long. I'm like, if he wants to watch something animated, let's have him watch The Simpsons. I can get behind this. So that's my third pick. What do you got?
Trying to decide between Schitt's Creek or South Park. Completely different shows, but make you laugh for totally different reasons. But I'll go with South Park for the creativity and ingenuity of Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Just incredible. I mean, that thing's been running not as long as The Simpsons, but close, right?
Yeah, pretty long. I'm just impressed by the range of your list. Like a wholesome family 70s sitcom and Happy Days. Sort of like a raunchy, a little bit in your face kind of thing, but adult kind of
Yeah.
HBO, Eastbound and Down. And then South Park, which kind of, animated, made for teenagers,
Yeah.
kind of thing.
Well,
A good
I
range
have
there.
sophomoric humor to say the least.
Exactly.
But I mean, there's so
That's
many
so
greats.
funny.
I mean, when I was growing up, I loved watching Who's the Boss.
Oh yeah, who's the boss?
And after school, back in the day, you'd have the run of Sanford and Son, Jeffersons, Good Times,
Brady
all.
Bunch. What about the Brady Bunch?
I never got into the Brady Bunch. No.
Cheers. We didn't mention Cheers.
Well, that must see TV back
Yeah.
in what, the 80s, night, that was Night Court, Cheers. What were the other shows that were Cosby?
Cosby Show, yeah, it's made my list. The song we did, look, I thought you were gonna say Friends. Friends was your
I
number
never
one
watched
favorite.
Friends. Never watched Friends.
Where everybody loves Raymond.
I never watched any of those CBS shows.
No,
Everybody
me
Loves
neither. I
Raymond,
never watched a
Yes,
single one.
Dear, Two and a Half Men.
The Young Sheldon one, whatever that
No.
show is.
Oh, Big Bang Theory.
Yeah,
No.
never watched it. Anything that was on
Never.
CBS, I don't know that we the same. It's so funny in my house. We do not watch CBS ever, except it's football or 60 Minutes or something like that. I also had Curb Your Enthusiasm on here. I had Good Times as one of my list. I had The Cosby Show, Frasier, MASH. Yeah, but I like your range. Happy Days. That really says who you are. Where I'm more of like the mainstream Seinfeld, Office, Simpsons, consistency, longevity. So it's like our personalities
Eric
perfectly.
and I just got done watching too on Netflix, Loudermilk with Ron Livingston.
Is that good?
Great
Someone,
show.
Craig McMichael, recommended that show to me.
Oh, awesome show.
Okay, I'll
Awesome
check
show.
that. I will check that out. That seems like a good place to stop. A reminder that the DeFly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. We'll be here all season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Share this with your buddies, the guys you talk about lacrosse with, your friends, your family. Share the love. It's free. Always love to hear from you. Feel free to reach out by email to us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.